I'm about to hop into the episode with Judah from Judah and the Lion, which we just finished a bit ago. But I will say this about the guy. He was here early.
He was like 15 minutes early.
And he was like, is that okay? And 15 minutes before the show starts, I'm already up here just kind of sitting. And we love it when people are early.
It's awesome.
And it's also a weird spot because traffic's always terrible around here.
Mm-hmm.
And we record a lot of these at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
So the fact that he was early, yeah, know that. Know that I was pretty happy with the situation whenever the show starts. But I really like Judah and the Lion. I really like Judah. And they came in on the radio show a couple months ago, huh?
Yeah.
Whenever that Casey song had just come out.
That's when they came in.
So we'll get to that coming up in a second. Let me again recommend Get Real with Caroline Hobby, which if you like music, and I suspect you do if you're sitting here, she has a fantastic podcast where she talks to a lot of the spouses of country music stars, which is a pretty interesting angle. And one of the last ones she did was Taylor Young, wife of Brett Young. Abby Smyers, who's Dan Smyers' wife from Dan and Shay, is a good one. Caroline Bryan, Luke Bryan's wife, is really good. And I don't know when it's going up, or maybe it has already, but I know Thomas Rhett's wife.
Yeah, it comes out tomorrow.
So it'll be Monday,
because
we're putting this up on Sunday.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, or you're probably hearing this whenever you're hearing it, there is a one with Thomas Rhett's wife, Laura Akins.
Yeah.
Lauren Akins. Laura.
Akins.
There you go. But check that out. Get Real with Caroline Hobby. Would love for you to check that out. Amy's podcast, Four Things with Amy Brown. If you're into sports, Lunchbox, Ray, Mundo, and Eddie have the Sore Losers podcast. And I guess that's it. You can check out me. I'll be on tour all this fall doing comedy and music. It's the Raging Idiots. It's Eddie and myself with Walker Burroughs from American Idol and Emma Klein. And come out to a show and laugh. And we're actually practicing today whenever you came here. Aren't we?
Yeah, playing. We're finishing up.
Yeah, we've written a couple funny songs. And so it's going to be music and comedy. And you can go to RagingIdiots.com and you can get tickets and come out and see us wherever you are. If you're in Austin or Chicago or Louisville or everywhere in between. Well, not everywhere, but a lot of where. All right, here we go. Here's the next episode with Judah from Judah and the Lion. Hey, welcome to episode 178 with Judah. I didn't know your last name was Akers.
Judah Akers.
I didn't know that was your last name. Dude, is that a public? I guess it's public. I found it on the internet.
Yeah, it's public.
I thought it may be like Judah.
It's on the wiki page.
And the Lion.
Yeah, I get that a lot, actually.
Like that was, I didn't know it was Akers, though. And what's funny is before I was really knowing that your band was a thing, I've known your uncle for a long time, who obviously now at this point, Gator is our station program director, but he's your uncle, and he'd be like, man, my nephew's in a band going places. And I would be like, come on. Everybody's got a cousin or a nephew or something in some sort of musical group.
Especially in this town.
That's going places. And I'd be dang if he wasn't right. And then here you guys are. Do you guys feel like now that the band is actually like piercing the consciousness? Because if you can do that, I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
To actually be something that kind of matters.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're all kind of striving to do, but it's hard because there's so many people doing it. Do you feel like the band now has kind of hit that place where people like the music in general is like, I'm curious what Judah and the Lions are doing. Judah and the Lions doing.
Yeah, I think especially we felt it with the release of this record, and it was the first time I felt like personally that there was a genuine like energy or like a genuine kind of hype around what we were doing. Just because with each record, for better or for worse, like each record kind of has like a new flavor, a new sound, or a new kind of perspective on the music that we make. And our goal as a band has always been like that we would just sound more and more like Judah and the Lion with each record. So whatever that means. It does feel good to have people enough to care about, you know, what you have coming next or what you're doing. And in that way can kind of create this excitement.
There's always that shift in interviews where for a long time you're begging to be interviewed. Mm-hmm. And then there's the turn where the interviewers are then begging you to interview you. And so are you feeling now like with a lot, we'll just say radio or even the streaming platforms, like they're like, oh, this is really cool. Judah and the Lion's coming by. For a long time, it was like, oh, we have to talk to Judah and the Lion, whoever this is. Because there is that shift. Do you feel like you're on the second side of that now?
I don't know. We'll see. We love working hard and we love, I mean, as weird as it sounds, I know some bands kind of hate it, but we really don't. We actually kind of love the personal side of getting to know people at radio or getting to know people on the streaming side or I don't know, kind of being involved with that quote unquote business side of what we do. So I think the more and more we visit places, even for us, it becomes like we're just coming in and talking to our friend Bobby, not like this like weird kind of introduction. It's like, we've met a few times now. So now that barrier or whatever that we feel hopefully has kind of been broken a little bit, which we're starting to feel a little bit.
What's up with the lion? Like, let's just go basic. Like, what's up with the lion? Like, was that a you thing before you met the two dudes?
It was actually my mom.
Okay.
I wanted to be a rapper when I was a 5-year-old kid.
Which we all did.
Yeah, it was like right when like, you know, Slim Shady was kind of doing his thing. And I just was obsessed with like 50 Cent growing up. And anyways, not that I'm necessarily proud of that now, but shout out to my heroes. But yeah, I had this like notebook and I would like write like these horrible poems. I called them poems or lyrics. And then my mom was like, I think she overheard me as like a little kid kind of like trying to rap or whatever. And the encouraging mom that she was and is, she said, well, if you're ever actually in a real group, you can just call it the Lion of Judah, which that comes from the Old Testament,
the Bible.
Right? But at the time I wasn't thinking Old Testament. I was just like, oh, that's tough, you know, like lions or whatever. But when we came up with the band, like when we started, it wasn't even like, we really didn't even like have intentions of starting a band. I had these songs that I was writing at the time playing college baseball and, was really wanting to just record these songs for myself, just to document kind of the season of life that I was in. And then when I met Nate and Brian, they're like, we want to make this a band. Like, we think that this is just more than just documenting these songs. And so the name Selfishly, Judah and the Lion, kind of came in. And then Nate and Brian were very hairy at that point as well. Brian had like
physically
really long
hairy,
long like hair. And then Nate has the beard that he's always had. So the Lion just kind of fit.
So are they now seen as the two guys that make up the Lion, like the Blowfish? And even though it really wasn't a thing, like Hootie and the Blowfish, it really wasn't. There was no Hootie.
Yeah,
there were no Blowfish, but people assumed that Darius was Hootie and the rest of the guys were the Blowfish. And I assume if people are like, oh, well, you're Judah, you two must be the Lion.
Yeah, and they kind of fight over it, which is sick. I make him with each interview kind of do like a little arm wrestle or fist fight for it.
And you guys met in college?
Yep, Belmont University, shout out.
So you go to music school though?
Yeah, I went to music business.
And so your goal, or maybe your degree goal, was to do what? Study and learn how to do...
I love songwriting, but for me as a songwriter, I almost don't... Like, I didn't want to study it as maybe as ignorant and as shallow as that sounds. Like, I just didn't want my songwriting to be necessarily boxed in to this kind of formula or... just because X and Y verse, you know, get to the chorus in 30 seconds or whatever the rules are. I don't know. I didn't want to put like a box around songwriting. So I wanted to be around music and music business, and I was on a baseball scholarship, which helped. But yeah, the goal was to do songwriting in some capacity. And I never really aspired to be an artist. Just transparently, like I never really thought that I had enough talent really to be an artist or to like to start a band or whatever. I was like, why would anybody want to listen to my music outside of my uncle? But it's really cool.
Wait, so you could sing though?
I could sing. I was a choir kid. I loved dancing.
Straight. Let me get this straight. You dance and you sing and you play ball.
Not as good of a dancer as you.
No, that's not true. Listen. You dance and you sing and you play ball and you're a big boy. How big are you?
Well, I actually just got my first physical the other day, and I think I've grown an inch, but I'm going to say 6'2".
This is why I don't really have a lot of like talent, because you get all of them.
Oh, no, that's not true. You're
I think
the one
I
talk.
Was just like skipped over, and so you're a ball player and a singer. Which one, what were you known like in high school then? What was the main thing that they knew you for?
I was a basketball player in high school.
You're not even a baseball player. You're a basketball player.
I honestly was like the Zac Efron of like, like one coat had like the basketball thing and then another coat was like singer.
So what were you, like a two guard?
I was a two guard. I was kind of the classic, just shoot it.
And you had good size. At 6'2" as a two guard, that's pretty good. So why'd you choose baseball over basketball?
Well, I got offered to walk on at Belmont. Then I got offered, or I could have potentially played at Ivy League school to play basketball. But I don't think I was smart enough to go to Ivy League school, and I didn't really want to go to Dartmouth. And I always wanted to do music, and Belmont just kind of had that flavor. And I honestly just fell in love with the baseball program at Belmont.
So they said you can come walk on basketball, go to school here. You were that good of a basketball player.
I mean, I was, yeah, at the time.
So what are we talking about? Average per game?
Like my senior year?
Yeah, like 15 a game?
I think it was like 24.
Oh, my goodness. You were scoring 20. What class ball was this?
It was 5A, Cookeville High School.
You used to average over 20 points a game in 5A? 5A basketball? Good God.
I shot it a lot, though.
I'm amazed right now. Those are some heavy numbers.
It was a fun time. I really missed the game of basketball. Probably, I mean, honestly, I miss it more than baseball. I really miss it, basketball.
So you scored over 20 points a game as a senior in high school, 5A ball. Where'd you go to high school?
Cookeville High School, just right up the road.
That is just stupid. That's just stupid that you were that good. Okay.
You ball too, right?
No, not like you. No, it's not the same. It's just not
gosh.
The same.
Yeah,
and
right.
I was a decent baseball player, and I played football a little bit, but I didn't have size either. So then you played baseball. What'd you play in baseball? What position?
I was there to hit. Essentially, I found out really quickly I didn't have a great arm for that D1 level.
And played first base?
Played first base.
You left-handed?
My freshman year, I was right-handed. And actually, honestly, for a D1 first baseman, I was kind of small. It's like most first basemen, I feel like that D1 level were like 6'2 to like 6'7 or whatever. But yeah, I played first base and DH my freshman and sophomore year. And then I played first base my junior and senior year.
Of high school?
College.
You played all 4 years of baseball in college?
I did.
Good God. Why is this guy even here? What is happening right now? I think you might be the most talented person to come and sit in. I talked to everybody. This is crazy.
That's so funny. I love that you're into like the sports.
I'm a diehard sport. I did a national sports show for a long time. Okay. I'm just a sports nerd. But again, let me just roll back to high school for a second. So do you have for average in high school?
Yeah. Like,
are you a 280 guy? Maybe more.
In high school, I think I was more like, it was like 400 or whatever. Jeez. But you know, it's high school.
You're stupid. This is so stupid. I'm gonna wrap this interview up, and I'm just gonna go play ball with Judah.
Come on, bring it on.
So okay, so you hit 400 in high school.
Well, like on a good like junior and senior year.
But you're also probably when I was guessing 280, I was imagining because you were taking some big cuts. But you were taking big cuts, also hitting 400.
That was more like college. Like 280.
How many home runs did you hit senior year of high school? Just roughly.
I don't remember. I was a doubles guy in high school. I became more of a home run hitter in college. Yeah, weak. No weak sauce. Just didn't have that power, dude.
So you're playing baseball in college, and you're figuring out music, or you kind of have found your spot, and you know it, and you know that's long term?
Still definitely figuring it out. Somebody had this quote that really marked me, and it said, if you come to Nashville or you come to Belmont, you can allow music to do two things to you. You can either allow it to intimidate you or to inspire you. And I think my first couple of years was definitely, I was allowing it to kind of intimidate me. And just because even like the bubble that Belmont University is, that everybody from every town that's in the music industry, whether they're into commercial vocals or guitar or whatever they're studying, it's like the most skilled, you know, players around. So you like kind of jump in there as like a, you know, a baseball player or whatever. And it's like, you can't hang with, you know, people that went on to do really well in like American Idol. And so it's just kind of like, it's that culture. And so I think when I really started just kind of allow the people around me to inspire me and to kind of push me was when I think I really started to kind of find my voice. But that was like later on, probably my junior, senior year.
We'll talk about your literal voice. So you're in high school and you're singing in choir, but what kind of, are you singing, singing songs at the church choir or like high school choir?
High school choir. Yeah. And then, I started up, playing at church. Like that was when, I kind of started finding, I guess like more of like a, it's kind of funny cause you hate to say like performance, but you know, you're in front of people and you're singing songs. It's definitely not about the performance. It's more about, you know, church and God. But definitely that kind of started my freshman year of high school.
You grew up pretty religious?
I did. Yeah. Big Jesus lovers. Religion was kind of a weird word to use in our family. Like we never really saw God as like a set of rules or like an agenda that we needed to follow. I always just have focused on like the love of God and how that can kind of, drive us as human beings rather than it be like the fear factor. Version of God, which a lot of people, and naturally can kind of find themselves into depending on what church or whatever you go to. But it was always just about loving God and allowing my heart to kind of let him love me back.
Let me walk through this. You finish high school. You go to college. You're a baseball player. You're probably playing reg basketball too and dominating. Stupid.
Not dominating.
Yeah, playing. You're figuring out the music thing. When do you go, well, I've now decided that my career is in music and this is what I'm going to pursue?
I think this switch happened for me, really when I met the guys. I was still kind of singing and writing songs, and but I just hadn't found like that aha moment.
Where do you sing?
I was still singing like in church.
Would you go around Nashville at all and sing any places here?
No.
Never.
It was mostly just like I kind of said, it was mostly to myself, like and like through church or whatever outlet there was, but we were singing all the time. You know, there was always like an event or whatever. But when I met the dudes, it was December of 2011, I think. It was like kind of like right before Christmas break, my junior year. That was when it was like, I met the dudes and I called my mom. It's kind of like, it's like, you know, when you meet your wife or whatever, and it's like some people, it's like the first day, like call the mom or whatever. It was kind of that similar kind of type of feeling. I'm very heart driven, very feelings oriented. And I just had a feeling, and I called my mom like crying. I was like, Mom, I really think that this is like the sound that feels like it's coming from something that's bigger or whatever. And at the time we were just kind of making these like folk bluegrass kind of type song, like quirky songs or whatever.
How do you meet both of them at the same time though?
So what's kind of interesting, like my roommate at the time, my junior year, randomly knew Nate. Nate was honestly kind of a figure around campus. Everybody thought he was homeless. That's when beards weren't very trendy. Like it was like, oh my gosh, who's that quirky kid that's very sweet to everybody on campus or whatever. And so I just simply called him up and I was like, dude, you don't know me. You like, I'm just a baseball player. I just like want to like jam out with you, which that's kind of a common thing. That's like, and around Belmont, it's like to kind of go for a jam or whatever with people. And I was like, dude, if you have anybody that's in your wheelhouse that kind of plays similarly or you've been playing with, bring them along. And so it was their sophomore and freshman year. And we met up for like some lunch and essentially went and like played through some songs. And it was like, I think it was kind of over for all of us. We just, there was something like palpable that, you know, it wasn't like crafted, well crafted, but it was just kind of like raw and organic and it just felt right.
So the sound that you guys have, and I'm curious when you contrast that with the sound that you guys had then. You're in a room and you're playing, let's say 3 months after this first meeting. Like what is, and I don't even know that it's Judah and the Lion yet, but what's the sound that you guys were rolling with then?
It was very like folk, like we wore like top hats and like we wore suspenders and stuff, and it was more like the lane of Americana probably fit in, and more kind of like nothing was crafted. Like it was just raw. I mean, honestly, it was just kind of raw us. It was just the banjo and the mandolin, and we had a cello at the time, and we had a female vocalist. And we were very inspired by like what was going on in the folk scene. Then the Lumineers and Mumford were just kind of starting out. And I honestly didn't even listen to Lumineers or Mumford until people started kind of comparing or whatever. And then I was like, oh, these guys are sick or whatever. So it was definitely more kind of in that. I mean, I had a kick drum that I played while playing the guitar. So it was kind of just stripped back, more kind of simple, I guess.
Did they see it as a long-term band solution, life plan?
Dude, Nate dropped out of school like 3 months after we met. He was like, this is it.
Oh, he was into it.
Yeah, he was like, this is it. Like he like, out of all three of us, he was the one that just kind of believed like from the get go that this was going to be something. I think for me, it was like, I loved music and I loved writing and I loved performing. But like I said, I was like, I don't know if it's like cocky for me to think that people would want to, like, I don't know who would want to come and like watch me sing my own songs. You know?
I think there's a healthy arrogance and I would say ego to it, because I struggle with that still today. Mm. Like, who is going to one, spend their morning listening to me talking on the radio, or two, come out and pay, you know, $40 for a ticket to watch me do stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, do I really think I'm good enough that people will dedicate their time and their money to?
It's a weird thing.
And I've struggled with that. It's funny to hear you say that too. So that was going on in your head.
Yeah, I was just, maybe it was just more practical for me. I was like, this is not going to happen. Like, you know, we're more likely to get struck by lightning for this thing to like really go. And yeah, I think Nate was like right away. I think Brian was kind of a little bit later. Yeah, I think it was after a little bit of pushing and some of the shows that were out of town that really started to, even if they were small crowds, you could kind of feel the passion in the room or whatever to have kind of like really loyal fans. That was when it was like, oh, this might actually be like something that people can attach themselves to.
Where did the fans build from at first? Like, how did the word get out about you guys?
I would say it was mostly college, like Athens, Georgia. That's like, will always be like one of our, we booked this show. I had a mandatory NCAA like weekend off or whatever. They're like, you can't practice or play games, blah, blah, blah. It's dead week. And so we booked this show, and our managers at the time was like, you guys are stupid for booking this show. We were booking our own things. We actually like had like, we made up like our own voice for an agent. I would just call and be like, hey, this is so-and-so like representing Jude and the Lion or whatever. And we booked this room. It was like 700 cap room or whatever, which we had no business booking looking back. But our managers was like, this is stupid. Like, it's not going to work or whatever. And anyways, we get there and the show sold out somehow. We don't know how. Like, there was this, a friend, Kate, that's a friend now, that kind of like helped us promote it kind of naturally. And somehow people were singing the songs. And I just will never forget that moment of being like, oh, we're not like in Nashville where our friends kind of reluctantly come to the shows, or like our moms are showing up or whatever. It was like, these are real people. Like, they paid $10 or whatever to get into this show. And it was like, from then on, it just felt like it kind of spread organically, like amongst the college. Belmont was such an like a beautiful kind of way to, because you have all these people that obviously come in from everywhere, but then they spread out in the summer. And so you would go play the shows in Georgia, or we play at Belmont or University of Arkansas or Texas, or in a lot of our hometowns like Chicago. Nate's from Colorado Springs. I'm from Cookeville. And then it just felt like it kind of started spreading kind of organically after that.
Were they downloading the music on iTunes at the time? Like, how are they?
Well, that's another thing. That was right before the whole streaming thing like really started. I think that was kind of starting, but we actually gave away our record for free on Noisetrade. What Noisetrade did at the time is they would essentially give your record away for free, but you would get an email in return. And so as a new band, like, emails were like...
Like an email address to send to someone to market, I'm coming to your town.
Yeah.
And how many songs do you put up on this Noisetrade?
Like 6 songs. It's like just an EP.
Any of them any good that you look back now and go, that thing could still survive today?
I think there's a song called Backs Against the Wall that we still play. Sweet Tennessee was on that record that sometimes gets played at the University of Tennessee football game. So there's some songs that are like, even though we were young and still in college, it still feels like us. Like, you would hear the song and be like, oh yeah, that sounds like Judah in the Line like 5 years ago or whatever.
What was the situation like with you guys living? Were you living together now? Were all three of you roommates? Or were you all still separate?
So Nate was homeless. This is kind of funny looking back. Nate was like, he chose to be homeless essentially. Like, he was.
What does that mean, homeless though?
He just like lived on friends' floors. And Nate's always been like a traveler. So like, he would go and just for a week, if he had a friend like in Fayetteville or whatever, he'd be like, hey, can I go sleep on your couch for a week or whatever? We have these weeks off. Me and Brian actually shared a bed in the room, like a room that we were at. So it was just kind of like, we were always together and had no money, had like, we were, you know, living off of like grilled cheese and ramen or whatever.
What were you driving around?
In my high school Jeep Wrangler.
And so you were cramming it full of everything.
Oh no, we had Cletus the van. Like, we bought her, we just sold her. So it's kind of emotional me talking about Cletus, but, We bought her as soon as we could afford the debt or whatever. And we lived in that 15 passenger white van for 6 years.
Who drives?
We all do. Definitely a different flavor though. It's like, it's so funny. You can tell like where each person is from based off of where they drive. Very interesting.
Where they drive or how they drive?
How they drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Brian's from Chicago. Remember like driving him with him the first time in the 15 passenger. It was so scary. He is just like, he's on a mission. If we're in the car, if he's driving, it's like, we're going to get there as fast as we can. For me, like I'm a Cookeville kid. And so like, I remember crossing into like the Northeast for the first time and people like honking at us because we're in a white van with a trailer and I don't know how to drive it. Actually my uncle's trailer, which is kind of funny thinking back, but yeah, just like getting honked at in the South, like it ruins your day. Like I remember being like so bummed going to our show in Philly just because I'd made like 3 or 4 people like super upset on the way there. But yeah, it's kind of funny. We all kind of help drive and do the thing.
You've heard me talk about how much I love my Sleep Number bed, but not only me, because listen, who cares about me? Amy, you love yours too, right?
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
And with you, you and your husband can have different Sleep Number settings.
Yeah, that's the best part, because I'm a 40 and he's a 60.
That's how old you guys are?
No. Oh. That's our Sleep Number.
My Sleep Number setting is 30. There's never been a better time to save on proven quality sleep right now. And during the Memorial Day sale, the Queen 360 Smart Bed starts at only $9.99. So many couples disagree on mattress firmness, and if I'm correct, you guys almost split up over that, huh?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm kidding. But they do. They're different. I sleep by myself, so I have to worry about that. But the Sleep Number 360 beds are so smart. They sense your every move. They automatically adjust to you. Go in during the Memorial Day sale and save $1,000 on a new Sleep Number 360 Special Edition smart bed for temperature balance and comfort at an exceptional value. You'll only find the Sleep Number in the 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the one nearest you at sleepnumber.com/bones. Today's technology makes it a lot easier for a lot of things because you're connected. Your cell phone is connected to your tablet. Your tablet's connected to your smart TV, and they're all connected to your Wi-Fi, but it may take only one weak link and all those connections for a criminal to get in. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security. While LifeLock uses proprietary technology to detect possible threats to your identity, like your info for sale on the dark web, Norton Security helps protect up to 5 of your devices from online threats like ransomware. And if there's a problem, their dedicated agents will work to fix it. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton gives you more protection for today's connected world. Join now, get 10% off your first year. Head to LifeLock.com, enter the promo code BONES. That's promo code BONES for 10% off your first year. LifeLock.com, promo code BONES.
I was reading some stuff about you guys early on when you guys basically played a lot acoustic, but then when you started to go a bit electric, it reminded me, because I'm not a huge Dylan fan, but I'm a Bob Dylan historian that I read everything about him.
Yeah.
And that angered a lot of people when he flipped and played electric. And not to compare the two and say that you're like Bob Dylan, but that situation is similar.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that a thing where some people were getting irritated at you guys for kind of switching the style a bit?
Oh, yeah. Like, after we came out with Full Cop and Roll, which is our previous record, like, the first couple weeks, like, I had to get off the internet because, like, people were just... Our old fans were like so pissed off and like didn't know why we would add distortion to the banjo. Didn't know why we felt the need to add like some hip hop flavors and then adding the synth and doing some like weird things to my vocal just kind of for the fun. It was like honestly, we like looked at each other after a month. We were like, man, we might be done as a band. And I remember one of our musical mentors, he did text me that. He said, you know, like after he heard the new record before we released it, he texted me and was like, this is going to make a lot of people upset. But just like, and obviously at a very different level, just like when Dylan changed over to electric, it made a lot of people upset, but you have to do what you have to do for your creative flows and for you to move forward and for what you think the band's going. And so, I guess about 4 or 5 months after was when it really started to actually pick up, and it was kind of getting into the ears.
It took that long, huh?
It took a while. Yeah.
And for a while, did you feel like, oh man, maybe we didn't do the right thing?
Yeah, I was like, dang, we're quitting music. Like, we're done. But yeah, there was kind of like a palpable moment of just like, oh, people now are like really get it and kind of understand that, you know, that's kind of who we are as a band. We want to kind of change and grow. And hopefully with each record, we can do that.
I'm going to play a little bit of Take It All Back here. Here's that. By the way, 3 weeks as a number one song. How about that?
Amazing.
Massive fan of you guys in the song, but I hear you and I'm like, what if you get a cold? Like, how do you sing like that when you get a cold? Are you gonna get allergy? Like, you live in the allergy capital of the freaking North America.
I think that helps, honestly, being out on the road, because you're like more, you're kind of better at defending it than maybe other places. A little cold is actually better for me. That's like my hot spot for my vocal. I always like, if we're going into the studio, it's like
you're licking just a few doorknobs, like not all the doorknobs. Yeah. Like you're just licking a couple doorknobs.
I was like, hey, can you cough on me just a little bit? But yeah, if it's too much, it's too much. Especially for some of the, I like kind of having like this punk rock flavor, like for the live show, which is more kind of like aggressive and screaming at times and whatever. So it definitely helps when you have a healthy voice.
I'm assuming this song was a big turning point for you guys as far as just feeling love from not only your diehards that's been there forever, but new fans just come piling in, right?
Yes. This song was a part of that transition that I was talking about. It's like about 6 months was when it really kind of started to happen. And people, it felt like new listeners kind of understood what we were doing in a way that we hadn't experienced up until that point in the record cycle. So this song especially kind of lifted it up.
And 3 weeks at number one, not just one. Do you watch the charts? Are you like, oh, we're getting close, boys. We're getting close.
That's the thing that I love being involved on the business side of what we do. And I love like pushing our team. And I'm more like, I love that side as well as the creative. But I try not to look at the charts. I just try to like, I think the last thing that I would want to do for creativity or for writing songs is be thinking about what would work on the chart. And rather than it just coming from a creative outlet that doesn't have like any barriers or any kind of, I don't know.
Yeah. But are you watching as it's climbing and you're like,
oh, we're definitely watching like it because it happened on Christmas Day.
Really?
Yeah. We like, or I guess I don't know whenever the chart went active, like, I guess it was after the New Year's or whatever. But we found out on Christmas Day that it was going to be like the number one. And then to have the 2 weeks to follow, which it was really, really cool.
Do you know what song replaced you guys?
I don't.
Who dethroned you after 3 weeks?
It's probably some like,
it's not like legacy. Arya in Game of Thrones where you're just holding out, you're saying their name over and over again until you can.
No, I don't have that much animosity towards whoever dethroned us.
You had a number four song here, Suit and Jacket. Talk about that one for a second.
So this song was actually written I was going through like a lot of new stuff in my life. My first nephew was born and I got to go meet the little dude out in California. And it was just such an amazing moment. And then followed that up about a month later, my grandpa I was very close with like suddenly passed away from a pretty aggressive form of lung cancer. And then one of my best friends from high school after like almost like 3 weeks after my grandpa passed, he passed with a pretty aggressive form of like leukemia. And I'd been around, you know, new life at that point, but not to the extent that where it's like my nephew, it's just like, it kind of feels like my own flesh and blood. I don't have children yet, but it was just surreal, like holding him. And then to walk out, I'm very close with Blake and Foff, my grandpa. And I'd never been around like death that was, I guess like the week before, like they kind of knew, you know, it was like the doctor came in. I was like, you don't have, you know, much time left. And with both instances, we were about to go out on the road. And so I went and visited both of them respectively at different times. And it was just such like a very marking experience to talk with two people that were going through like what it looks like to pass. And it was very like beautiful and sad and painful. And I think with Suit and Jacket, it's kind of like a dramatic intro to Suit and Jacket. But I think it was just like we wanted to write a song that was like, it was kind of like one of those aha moments of like, why are we doing this? Like, why are we making music? Why? It's not about like becoming famous or the fluff or making a lot of money or whatever. Like, we wanted it to mean something. And so, like, I don't know, this song a lot kind of instills like that. Like, what are we doing with life? Like, what are our listeners doing with your life? I don't care if you're an accountant, if you're Bobby Bones, if you're a doctor, if you're an artist, like, we all need to get after life, because we're not promised tomorrow. And so I think that's what I learned so much through that. And what would I tell my little nephew about life? And I think that is just to get after it.
I can get a little bit more of this. Everybody knows what we know, it's growing up. Where do you put this in the set list?
So we have our first set, like really first set, with the new stuff and some of the old stuff. This is going to be like, I feel like it's gonna be midway.
What do you end
with? Always a good, icebreaker. We're still going to end with Take It All Back right now.
What's interesting about that song is, I guess you guys had, written it and you played it for like a year and a half or something before you ever cut it.
Yeah, 2 years before.
Is it 2 years?
Yeah.
And so you kept playing it and you guys as people will be like, yo, where the song?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, we haven't got it yet.
Yeah. It's kind of like what Luke Combs just did with Beer Never Broke My Heart.
And they're like, hey, put out the... So you finally make this. And by the way, after 2 years of building, it's like, how do we cut this thing exactly right? Like, people...
It was very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it had such a cool live feel. But we obviously, like, when people listen to the record, they want to hear it from a record, not like the live version. So it was fun to kind of actually mix and match, because up to that point, like, we've never recorded up to this last record, never really recorded anything to click. So if you add kind of the popier or whatever elements to a thing that's not on a grid, you know, it becomes really hard. But
and the vocals, like the live part of this, is actually a part of a live show, right? Like, you took some of the iPhone of them singing and you put it on this track.
Yeah, we had our three iPhones just at the front of the stage and had people sing the chorus or whatever, which was really fun. It was back in my hometown, Cookeville. We did like a outside show there. It was cool.
They have a sign for you yet? Like, here, your hometown, Cookeville, Tennessee, hometown of Judah.
No.
Anyone else from your hometown famous?
Rich Froning.
Who?
Rich Froning.
Oh.
He's like he's been like the fittest man on earth 4 or 5 times. He's like,
a body,
the CrossFit.
Yeah, like the weightlifter guy.
He's essentially
I don't know if he's I've seen that guy on ESPN.
Yeah,
it took me a second.
He's like kind of the face of CrossFit.
Okay, but I would say that so far you're winning. Anyone else? I'm just seeing who's going to be on the sign. Like, if they got to pick a sign, so far I think it's you, Judah.
No, it's definitely Rich.
It's you and a guy doing curls. So, what in Nashville? You're married. Been married for how long?
I'm married. Yeah, going on 4 years. It's crazy.
What do you guys do for fun? Like, what's the thing?
We have a dog, new dog. So we love going to the parks now, whether it be Shelby Park or Sevier or whatever, and just like walk around with our puppy. We love like going out to dinner and going to get coffee, like Crema or Steadfast or Barista Parlor or wherever people get coffee. We love all of that stuff. We love the community that we have kind of around. We love like grilling out and doing the thing. Like for me, home is such a, I'm kind of a natural, like naturally I'm kind of a homebody. So for me, home is just so much about doing the simple things like cooking and walking your dog and just being with your wife.
You work out?
A sauna.
That's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. That's why I said it.
I would just sauna every day and never work out if I could. I'd just be like, but... We all aren't as genetically blessed. Was your dad a big dude?
Yeah, kind of.
Was he an athlete?
He was an athlete, yeah.
What did he do? Sports wise, like
he played. He was a really good basketball player. Yeah.
I'm so jealous. I'm jealous.
Yeah, right.
You have all the skills.
I saw those running videos of you the other day with your shirt off. You look great.
You know, those running videos, they made fun of me because I like swing my hands in a very feminine way when I run. So I'm glad you bring that up because I'm running like, hey, look at me. Like I can, like I've done
people
a couple.
On the internet are so mean.
They are mean, but they keep us honest too.
That's true.
Do you, so you, I don't look at Facebook. I can't because it's just,
I don't
place.
Have Facebook.
You guys just, you just got Instagram though, like in December.
Yeah. Isn't well, right? We kind of did the whole like go away thing and then came back.
When did the band's page start?
Yeah, a few years ago, like when we started.
And then you shut it down?
Shut it down. And we wanted this record to be kind of dramatic. So we did the Taylor Swift shutdown thing and then came back.
Turned it all off and then brought it all back. I do run a little feminine. Do you, what, you're probably a pretty masculine runner, huh? You probably run by and they're like, that's a man's man right there. Like,
maybe, no. I might have some quirkiness there too.
How'd you meet your wife?
She was a songwriting major at Belmont. And... yeah, just through school we met, just through our friend group, and that was another. It was on for me when after the first day it was like, it's over. I got to convince this girl to really like me.
Was there more love initially meeting the band or your wife?
Obviously the wife.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Why are you winking at me? He's not winking at me. So, all right, let me go some of this new stuff here. Let's do Over My Head. Here we go. I've heard this on the radio, right? This is right. This is one that would be played, huh?
Yeah.
It's top 10.
Yep.
Made top 10.
Yep.
Is it still moving? Is it still the single or
no? We kind of stopped it. We started pushing another one, essentially.
I've heard this one on the radio. Turn this one up. So what's the point if that's our purpose honored by design? All this stressing got me confessing that. What are you guys on now?
A song called Why Did You Run?
Here's that one. I wasn't. What do you like in the studio? If you go in, how many times are you singing the song? Are you, I need to do it 100 times and get it right, or you feel good pretty early?
You know, I think that we kind of came from the rule book of perfection, the imperfections make beautiful, like music. And those kind of, what did Robin Williams say in Good Will Hunting, that the idiosyncrasies are the ones that like really make us like human beings. So we as much as perfection as we like to get to with everything and all that, I think the imperfections and not overthinking it is what makes it the beautiful music that we hope we strive to put out.
You a movie guy?
I would say
1 through 10, where'd he fall?
Six right. out of 10. I'm a big show guy.
Like TV?
TV shows.
Yeah, I'm more like a foreign movies.
Yeah.
It's just a long time.
I agree. We have a lot of friends that love going to movies, and I'm just like, I don't know.
Oh, I won't even go to a theater.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Avengers. I have to go. Have you seen Avengers?
I haven't seen it.
It's just, I don't want to touch things that people have been touching.
Oh, interesting.
You know how you want gonorrhea and stuff, so you can sing. But is that what you said earlier? You want gonorrhea to sing? I don't want to touch any of that stuff. I'm not trying to catch anyone's like hand.
You're kind of a clean freak.
A bit. Okay. You know how you walked in and you were like, wow, the carpet sure is clean. Should I take off my shoes? I just keep things clean for the most part.
Interesting. I like that. That's the way my wife is.
I think with me though, it's so deep rooted that if I don't know if you spent much time in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I have. And I feel like I'm me because I just show up to work. I don't have an incredible skill set, but I show up all the time and on time. And I work, by the way, you were early here today. Look at you.
Thanks.
You get an award.
Fought the traffic.
Absolutely. But I show up all the time and I show up to work and I work hard. And I feel like if I get sick, then I'm not able to do the one thing that I can do,
right?
Which is show up and work.
Be Bobby Bones.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if I get sick, how do you get sick? Well, by touching and licking things. So I'm not trying to touch and lick it. So it's very deep rooted in that I'm not secure with my ability to do anything.
I like that.
So once you start to peel it back, I'm not just weird. I'm scared.
You're just a professional.
I'm scared.
Yeah, I got you.
That's what shows you like?
Well, I'm kind of mumbled there. I'm hesitating to even say it.
Are you going to say Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
That's okay. We're not going to spoil it. I'm a big fan.
I love Game of Thrones.
Yeah, big fan. I was reading a story today, and depending on when you guys hear this, because these things last forever, but how a lot of the people are they're petitioning for there to be new writers and to rewrite the season, the last season. How do you feel about that situation? Without spoiling anything.
I think it is what it is. Personally, like, they're trying to write and they're trying to, you know, obviously provide the story that they think that is going to happen. Cause you know, with the books and the way that they're coming out, they're not completed. So it's like, they've been given a pretty hard task, and yeah, the media has been like, it's been gnarly. Like everybody is just not liked. I don't know what I'm allowed to say, but
I loved it. For me speaking, and I feel like the writers have been and were consulting with George R. R. Martin anyway.
Yeah, right.
He totally had to sign up and on for whatever happened to happen.
It's true.
And I think it gives him, if he decides to finish the book before he dies, because they're like, hey, dude, you ain't getting any skinnier and you're getting older. So you need to get to writing.
That's true.
I think it gives him the freedom to actually go a different way as well.
Yeah, and which can make him kind of the hero, which is sick.
So, like the OG. Okay, Game of Thrones. I'm totally down with Game of Thrones too. What
me,
else you like?
Me and my wife watch The Office every single day.
Me too. Yeah.
Like it's, I don't know if you like this, but.
Hey, look, I have an Office shirt on, by the way.
Oh, no, I was adoring that. Yeah, it's like right before, I know you're not supposed to go to sleep with your phone, blah, blah. Like, not good for your sleep, but.
You're a rock star. You gotta sleep with your phone, dude. That's what rock stars do now.
It's on.
We sleep with our phone.
It's well, like you watch a little, your like comfort pillow.
You watch Office on the phone?
I do.
How old are you?
28.
Typical.
Typical
young guy thing to watch shows on a phone before he goes to bed. I'm doing the old pilgrim
like the
thing.
Easy tour bus thing. Yeah. So you kind of have to get used to it.
Yeah, I'm like an old colonial guy. I'm watching on my TV before I go to sleep. Who's your favorite character on The Office? Take Michael Scott out of it.
Creed is so fascinating to me.
Right. Creed and Kevin.
Kevin's a good one.
Kevin, and it's so small, so this blips.
Yeah.
But to me, he's so funny when he comes on.
There's so many. Like, The Office will always go down. It's probably my favorite show, best show of all time.
You ever watch The British Office?
I tried for a few episodes, and it didn't give me what the other, which makes sense. Like, even with The Office, you kind of have to watch the first season to kind of really start to understand it. So I don't know if I really gave it like the shot that it needed, but I haven't done it yet.
It's funny when I recommend to people that I'm close to watch The Office, I'm always like, watch it, but I'll be honest, the first season's not great.
Yeah.
They're finding themselves. About middle season two is when it starts to just rot. It's just, it's on, and it's on through about season seven where it loses its place a bit after Michael loses, but then it comes back.
Right.
Gets its, that show is so good at bringing on secondary characters. I'd say Creed and Kevin are secondary characters.
Right.
But bringing in new characters, and they just feel like they belong. Like Andy and Aaron.
So true.
They fit. And that never happens on a show where you bring in main characters, and you're like, oh, they're good. We'll just keep going.
Yeah, you just instantly like them. They feel like they're part of the story.
My rule is 10 years, and you can actually talk about the ending of a show, like the 10-year spoiler rule, like openly. Mm. I just found out The Office only ended 6 years ago. Did you know that it only ended 6 years ago?
Oh, interesting. Sense,
yeah. So I guess we can spoil episode one of the first season.
Or, Diversity Today.
Yeah. So, I'm a big Office fan. What else are you watching?
Big Office. I mean, I guess now, let's see, what else am I watching other than Game of Thrones?
What would be your platform, like when it's time to pull up? Are you a Netflix guy?
Netflix, of course.
HBO. Hulu?
I have Hulu. We had Hulu just for This Is Us. So I think we deleted it after we watched This Is Us.
They're not done yet. You ever
they're not done.
Any of the Marvel stuff? You ever watch The Punisher on Netflix?
I've never watched it, no.
I just want one person to answer yes to that at one point. It's so good.
Okay, interesting.
You like shoot 'em up stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do you like do you like the superhero stuff?
Yes, of course.
Have you seen Avengers except for the last one?
Not the one before this one.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm down with the Avengers.
Yeah, it's good. I only watched I'm not even that cool. I don't watch the second one like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And now I'm, except for getting whatever chlamydia I'm going to get in the movie theater, I'll go right now.
All right, this is getting worse.
But yes, it's escalating the longer we go. You know, whenever you came to the studio, you came and we played for the first time that song that you did with Casey Musgraves. Mm. And yeah, it's so good. This is called Pictures. Here we go. I'm going to play this. So this is from the new album, Pep Talk. It's called Pictures. So you're sitting in a room, and who goes, hey, maybe we should make this a duet, or is it written as a duet?
What's funny about this song is we kind of did the studio in versions. So we did like 1 week and a half in May, a week and a half in June, and a week and a half in July. And this song came up at the week and a half, the kind of the middle part. We didn't even have this on like the list of songs that we were going to cut. But I had this old voice memo, and it's kind of the reason why we did it this way, so we could remember songs that we had written and blah, blah. And I had this old voice memo of me just kind of playing it through the first time after I had written it that day. And after I listened to this song, I was like, oh my gosh, this just needs like, this needs Casey Musgraves on this.
Oh, you
like,
thought of Casey immediately.
Because I was so obsessed with Golden Hour at the time that I was writing that song. And I was like, this sounds like I was just almost maybe subconsciously just influenced by Casey and her writing. I don't even want to compare this song to any of Casey's songs, but like I could feel the kind of the naturalness of like the voices together and her voice on the song. And so we essentially sent the demo that we made after that day. We were like, let's cut this song. Let's see if she'll do it. And she ended up randomly like really loving the story behind the song and loving the song and came in and did it. It was crazy.
It's the only artist you've asked to do something and hop on a record, or have you been turned down before?
Oh, we haven't been turned down yet, which is really cool.
Probably like in life with all the girls, you probably just boring. I'm a baseball player. I sing. I'm 6'2".
I feel like that stereotype sometimes can bite you on the head too. Sometimes people hate that. But we had John Bellion on this record as well. He's become like a close buddy of ours.
Is that right? Mm. Boy, his stuff is mind blowing.
He is so good.
He's so good.
Even better human being. Like you would love him.
How'd you guys hook up?
We did a tour together with 21 Pilots and, just kind of became boys on that. He's also a big baller. And so we would play basketball after the games and the arenas that we were at, and just love that dude. Love his music. Love his heart.
So the tour was 21 Pilots,
John Bellion,
guys. What's that whole scene like?
That was such a fun tour. I mean, we were like, Take It All Back was just kind of starting to happen at radio. So I don't even know why we belonged on that tour. It was, you know, 21 Pilots, amazing live band. We were already kind of like in love with their music and their live show and what they did. And we aspire to put on as energetic of a live show. And, anyway, so when we got asked, it was like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this is happening. And then you get on the tour and it's like, the fans are amazing. Very like inclusive. You get to see the production of what John Bellion's doing and what 21 Pilots is doing, which is super inspiring and super like, we try to become like super coachable in that moment too, just like learning like, why is this working and why is this going so well and like, what's this culture that they're setting up? So it was such an amazing thing. And then getting to play the basketball, like I think 10 spots, was really fun.
10 spots.
Like 10 different like venues. So like when we were at Memphis.
Did you ever go play the Grizzlies? You go to the NBA arenas?
Yeah, so we played in the Grizzlies stadium, but they had like a practice court. So we got to play
the practice. By the way, those are better than any other court you're going to get on.
They're so sick. It was so fun. We did it at Mavericks, Boise State, and a couple of others. It was
How do you even get into that? Who makes that call? Because I go places. Nobody lets me in anywhere.
Dude, that's all 21 Pilots can. That's not us.
So I need to call 21 Pilots next time. And they'll get me in somewhere.
Yeah, hit Tyler up and he'll make it happen.
What are those dudes like? You like them?
Yeah, we love the whole 21 Pilots camp. So good. Obviously make meaningful, heartfelt music that is accessible to people and everyone. And very like, Tyler is very passionate and very intense. And that's so inspiring. Like he knows what he wants and that's what he goes for. And this is really cool. And then Josh is just like, this sweetheart drummer, and he's also really buff. So
you ever get anybody wants good. To start any crap with you because you're Judah from Judah and the Lion? Like, hey, pretty boy, let's fight.
I don't know how many I haven't gotten that yet.
No one's ever like, hey, what's up with that long hair, pretty boy, and all the tattoos? You think you're a singer? Shove.
Has oh yeah, happened? We. I mean, all my old like jock friends, that's what they do.
But, no one's jokes. Trying to prove a point. They could beat up Judah.
Not yet.
I bet you can handle yourself, huh?
I don't know. I'm not really a I'm not really a fighting person.
Yeah, but you don't have to be a fighting person to actually. I have such man envy right now. You're everything that I had ever wanted to be in every way.
I feel so encouraged right now.
You should leave here just top of the freaking world, man.
The best interview I've ever had.
Man, the Pep Talks Worldwide Tour, all July through October, everywhere from Kansas City to Lincoln, Nebraska, Birmingham, Raleigh, Nashville. You're moving up a level. I'm looking at the venues. And I'll say this. By the way, you're playing Ascend in Nashville. And a lot of the places that my show is heard. Pittsburgh, Greenville, South Carolina, D.C. at the Anthem, Boston, Grand Rapids, a couple of St. Louis, Tulsa. That being said, let me say this. You're going to play Ascend Amphitheater. Are tickets on sale yet or no?
They've been on sale for about a month.
Now, do you get... Because tomorrow, I'm doing a whole stand-up tour all through the fall as well. And my tickets go on sale tomorrow. And I'm like, dear God, please.
Your ticket count.
Big time.
Yeah.
Dude, I look and I'm just like, I just don't want. You're very, very vulnerable when you have to go, do people like me? Will they buy tickets?
Stand-up is a new level of that.
Just
too.
Anything. And you last time you played the Ryman.
Yep.
And now you're going to play Ascend. Mm. Well, that's a little bigger. I've played the Ryman. I've never played Ascend. I don't think enough people would buy tickets for me to play Ascend.
You never know until you try it.
Well, but I'm not going to try it because I'm not ready to be out there. I'm not ready for people not to buy tickets.
That's what I told our agent. I was like, what if we put this on this, 7,000 cap venue and nobody come? That's always my life.
Or even only 4,000 come. Because
right.
When you sell out 2,800 or whatever the Ryman is, and it's full, you look great. But if you sell 4,000 into 7,000, well, you're the big dope that thought you were a little cooler than you actually were.
That's very true. And it could happen, which is scary.
I'm taking you back down. I don't want to do that. I want to take you back down.
No,
I'm trying
like
to take
it.
You back down.
No, I like it.
I just wonder if that to you is a level like, ooh, do we try to, or who are you the one that goes, let's do bigger?
I think it's a push and pull, honestly. I think we have a great team that kind of advises on what swings we can take. And there are a lot of rooms, like, I mean, Red Rocks is on there. There's a lot of rooms that I was like, when he sent a schedule to me, I was like, dear God, this is not going to be good if people don't show up.
You're playing ACL Music Festival?
ACL for the first time.
Legit.
We're super pumped for that.
Yeah. I still live in Austin part of the year. My favorite city.
It's amazing.
Legit. It's the best.
What's your taco spot in Austin?
I'm just not, Mike, you can answer this. I'm just not a taco. Everybody loved tacos. So you know what I did? I didn't love tacos.
Oh, that's sick. I like that.
So.
Individual.
Mike.
I make my own.
Oh, you're right. He's true Mexican.
Oh, wow.
So.
Nice.
All the places that people tell you, they're usually overrated because they just looked on the internet.
That's true.
I'm not a big Guero's guy. Did you ever go to Guero's?
Never went.
Well, so I'm curious with being kind of local Austin. Torchies,
good.
Those are good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's if that's
I like because I that's
go to Torchies.
We love Torchies.
Fine. Yeah. It's actually good. It is good.
Yeah.
But the whole like if you're gonna go for barbecue, people will go here. Like I like an Ironworks. Really, nobody goes to, like old school. You have a favorite barbecue place?
I don't eat meat.
Oh yeah, he's vegan. Mike lost 120 pounds.
Dude, that's sick.
He was hardcore, and then he went no more.
Yep.
You know what he would do? He would listen to Take It Off, and then he would just run.
Take it all back, just run.
All your music, and it would just run.
Shit off 100 pounds.
And so you're, thank you, and you're welcome.
Run hard. Well, listen, man, it's crazy to hear your story. I had no idea something. And thanks for the free merch.
Oh, yeah, of course.
There's one thing let me see what this shirt is.
We didn't know what size you were.
I'm extra large. Is that what you got? No, God, no. I'm barely a medium.
Okay, that's why I was like, I told them medium.
Here's the.
But I don't know what size they have.
Jude in the line, it's a basketball goal. I'm blind. What is that, a basketball?
Yeah, it's a basketball goal.
I'm going to put this on. We'll take a picture. And I like wearing people's merch next to them. Makes me feel cool. It's like, I know the guy whose shirt I'm wearing. It's a real pride point for me.
Nice.
So, what's the deal? I know you got the records out, Pep Talks. Going to go out and tour. What's happening in your mind now? What's the next level up for you guys?
Well, I mean, right now, it's just, we are so excited about playing these songs live. There's nothing like putting a record out and then seeing what the live show kind of births into and grows into and all of the words. And so we're playing some festivals this year that we're really, really stoked about. Obviously the tour. We're hoping that we love this message in the record. We really feel like this is the best or maybe the most or
most
whatever.
Most personal record. That's every.
I know it's everybody, but it really is. It's like, it's.
But it should be.
The way I would like to say it is that this record, we really had something to say.
Fair.
And so I think within that, it feels like there's already some like really cool stories that have come out from it, and we're really excited to play these shows live and just to kind of see where the world takes it. It's been out for like a week and a half now, so it's like everything's kind of happening. It's out in the world forever.
Just once in an interview, I don't care where it is. It could be Poughkeepsie. It could be Sacramento.
I hate this. I hate our new record.
No, don't say I hate, but just do the, you know, we're really thinking about it. This is probably the least personal record we've ever done.
Well, I think since this one was so personal, I think the next one is going to be like, just.
You could do like Weezer. Do you know what he, you know what about, he did, right?
Just do the covers.
Well, so Rivers would write the song. I'm a huge Weezer guy.
I love Rivers.
And so, you ever met him?
We have met, yeah.
Kind of a peculiar feller.
Yeah, he's very, have you listened to, I don't want to get your beef up your competition, but have you listened to a Song Exploders podcast?
First of all, I have no competition. It's everybody makes everybody better. And no, I haven't, nor will I. No, I'm just kidding. What is it called?
I don't know if you wanted to cut everybody else down.
No, not at all. Who is it?
It's a podcast called Song Exploder.
Song Splitter.
Song Exploder.
Song Exploder. Got it.
That's the cookbook coming out at me. Song Exploder. And essentially what they do is they take songwriters like Rivers, and they break down like just the way that they songwrite, their process, like, and then they'll have like flashes of their demo of the song or whatever. And they have a really cool one.
With
Rivers.
Oh, yeah. With Rivers specifically.
And he is so inspiring the way that he writes, so like mechanical. And so it's so interesting. It's really, really cool.
He's going to be at American Idol on Sunday, which I'm on this season.
Amazing.
And they're going to play, and I'm pretty excited.
That's sick.
That's why I look like I look too, because I was a nerd and I was like, well, if Rivers Cuomo can be cool, because I was a tiny kid listening to the Blue record, Blue album, and I was like, oh, but you know, he didn't write a bunch of songs about anything personal, right? Nothing personal, nothing personal. And then, you know, the Pinkerton album, he's like, I'm going to try to write some personal stuff, writes it, people hate it.
Yeah, right.
And then he's like, screw this, I'm doing nothing personal ever again. And so now, you know, I've read interviews. I'll check out the podcast where he just talks about how it's just a lot of nonsensical stuff.
It's like stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like right out of bed, 30 minutes, writes down. It's very interesting. His process. It's really cool.
I had a friend that wrote with him, and I won't say her name. But so she's like, okay, I recorded this song and I have it. And she wanted Rivers to be on the record, and she's a pretty big artist. And she was like, okay. So I sent it to him and I said, hey, this is your part. And he sent it back. I was like, this is terrible. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to completely rewrote it.
Oh, whoa.
Sent it back. And she goes, at first, I was a little bit insulted. She goes, but then I heard it. And I was like, oh, it's way better than what I had written anyway. Awesome. So, yeah, I thought that was cool.
Get on this mysterious lady that swallowed her pride and let Rivers do his thing. It's cool.
Yeah. Any of these other acts that you looked up to or thought were cool that now can reach out to you or you reach out to them?
I got to meet, my hero band growing up was Switchfoot, and I've become like a, like John Foreman has always been somebody that I just think someone that it's meant something. And I think that's always been like so inspiring for us, is like, we want our music to mean something more than just whatever. And
also a band who they have real, real Christian roots.
Right.
And people will go, wait, are they a Christian band or not? Secular? Not, I don't know. But totally. They were, you know, a straight ahead pop rock band. They were just very Christian.
Yeah.
And I think you guys kind of get that as well. Like, wait, what's happening with these guys? Are they a Christian band or are they a rock band that are Christians?
Yeah, we can. And I think for what we do, it's like, we sometimes you put the Christian name on something that obviously means that it's exclusive. And so you have X and Y that's at a festival and they hear that you're a Christian band. Well, they already write you off because they think that you judge them or hate them for their experience and their own version of what somebody has represented Christianity to them, sure, has been, which is sad about, it's just sad about it. You know, it's like, so you put that name on it, it becomes kind of exclusive. It's like, well, this is what this person thinks about me, whether it be like drinking or sexuality or whatever. And I feel like our message has always just been like, we're all like in this together. I don't care like what you believe in. Like, I don't care what, even like you're doing this specific moment or whatever, like it's all about us kind of just doing life together. So I've become friends with John, which has been really cool.
Now, from this part of the podcast, we're just going to take like two more minutes. And if you have not seen Game of Thrones, I encourage you to turn it off. Stop listening right now. I'm just giving you a spoiler-free zone here. Who do you think will have the throne after next week? Because it's all going to be on file. Right here, it's going to be saved.
I think based off of the prophecy over Arya with the eyes, I think Arya is going to kill...
The green eyes. She has green eyes. So you think she'll kill...
Because everybody thought it was going to be Cersei. And then now it's like, no.
Would you like Jon Snow to be... Or is that just too good to be true? Is it too much in the... Oh, the fans...
I like that it's pointing back to the Starks. Because, you know, the show starts...
Well, I think Bran's probably the guy. If it's me, I think that's who's got the throne next week.
But Bran has been so, like, funny. I think what does Bran even do?
That's exactly. Like, he rolls around. He rolls his eyes back.
Like, looks, like very judgmental at people and just kind of like, it's like, what are you doing,
Bran? I'm picking Bran to have the throne.
All right. I'm picking Sansa. I think they're gonna let her.
Solid choice.
I think that she's going to be the one.
I would like to see Arya have it. Everyone's favorite's Arya. She's a scrapper, and everybody feels like they're scrappers.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. Question for you.
Go ahead.
Do you think, because I know that technically, I think from the books, Dany can't get pregnant after the whole...
After
the fire, curse or whatever.
Yeah, right.
With the witch thing that happened, whatever, the horse and all that. I still think she might be pregnant with Jon's baby.
And that could change things. Will the baby rule... Will it be like a Twilight? You ever watch Twilight?
Yes.
Good for you. I haven't. What a loser. Creepy. You're such a loser. A no, it is because Jacob, I actually know. Jacob was like, actually wasn't in love with her. He's in love with the baby she had in her belly.
That's some.
Yeah.
Can I say effed up?
Yeah, you can say whatever
That's
you want.
That's some effed up stuff. Yeah.
So you're going with Sansa.
Yep.
I'm going with Bronn. Mike D?
I said Bronn too.
Do you?
Like if that doesn't pay off. From like this whole time, I think it has to be something there.
From the first episode, when the guy falls off the freaking tower, when he catches the you know them doing it,
that's kind of redemptive. That is true. I just got chills.
Yeah,
so maybe it is.
Listen, I'm glad you came by.
Thanks so much.
We just did an hour here, just chopping it up, talking about life and thrones and gonorrhea. We got it all in.
You brought up gonorrhea.
We got it all in. But I got it in the movie theater. You know, it wasn't any other way other than that. So gonna be out on tour all the summer and fall. Pep Talks is out, and good to spend some time with you. And what I'm about to do is I'm about to put on your cool. I'm going to put on the hoodie too, and then we're going to take a picture together. And they're not going to know the difference between you and I. I can already tell what's going to happen. I'm going to post a picture, and they're going to be like, "Which one's Judah?"
Yeah, that's true. I'll take that.
Yeah, it'd be good for you too.
Yeah, it'd be good for me.
Wow.
Good looking dude over here.
all right, we'll see you guys next time. Bye, everybody.